WLFP Braddock.
Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, as I hope is your custom.
Sunday morning habit.
Sunday morning habit sounds good.
If you're listening to our podcast, welcome to whenever you're listening to it.
Right. And welcome also to our guest who's on the line. Joseph Resendo is a travel expert. He's written about it. He's done radio, does radio on travel. He's does television, traveling. He has wonderful life. Hello, Joseph.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Good morning, Ann and Peter. Yes, it has been a wonderful life. It continues to be a wonderful life, and I think the reason it is back in 1969 when I was a student at UCLA and went to Europe for the first time on a USO show. I was had a different dream back then, and it changed around rapidly once I got to Europe for the first time and discovered that the wonderful world of travel was something that was going on, and other cultures and other people were living in wonderful places, beautiful places, having also equally wonderful lives. And that really just turned me on to the whole travel experience, and that was it. I was caught and bitten and just wanted to spend the rest of my life traveling, and have had the great, great good fortune and thankful and grateful for having the opportunity to have traveled.
But you said you were an actor first.
Huh?
You said to me on the phone you were an actor first.
Yes, I was. I was an actor for a long time, for 14 years, but much of that time, the last 5 or 6 or 7 years of that time, I was working very diligently trying to figure out a way to get back to the travel experience, and figured out a way to become a travel writer and do it all the time. And fortunately, since then, I've published a newsletter. I've done a travel radio show for 23 years, and most recently, a travel television show called Travelscope that's airing on public television stations, PBS stations.
Yeah, and you have a website. You might as well give your website now, too.
Sure. Well, people can go to our website, travelscope.net, www, of course, travelscope.net, and they can get a whole information about Travelscope. They can read our free e-magazine and listen to hours and hours of archived radio shows, see our video, demo video of our TV show, and clips from our different TV shows, and get other information about travel in many, many forms. So that's a great resource, travelscope.net.
And you're there with your cool straw hat on. I'm on your website right now.
Right, that's my Cuban hat made in Panama.
There you go.
all the great Panama hats actually are made in Ecuador. That's the symbol of Travelscope, moving around and trying to visit the world, but also to introduce people to people. Every show that we do, whether it's a radio show or a television show, ends with a quote from Mark Twain: "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness."
I love that quote. I just love that. Now, we got to you via DK guidebooks, especially the eyewitness guides.
Yeah, they're absolutely my favorite guidebooks. Yeah. They have been since I saw the very first one, which was Rome. I think Rome was the first one we bought. I mean, we bought an updated Rome. We've been getting them for so long.
Well, they have wonderful, wonderful books. People who don't know about DK Eyewitness Travel Guides do know about it. It's interesting. The connection is that DK Eyewitness Travel Guides is our national underwriter for the Travelscope PBS television show. I've worked with the company for years and years before the PBS show came about, but it was a perfect match because one of the things that separates DK from all the other guidebooks, and I've used many, many, is the depth that they go into giving you the backstory on the cultures, on the destinations, the landmarks, the attractions that you're visiting. They really go into depth. Besides that, they're absolutely beautiful books, beautiful photographs, beautifully written, wonderful descriptions, and And they have a tremendous interest in culture, a tremendous interest in people, and that's what's highlighted a lot in their books. And that's the perfect match for Travelscope, because both the radio show and the television show now and the publication have all really had an emphasis on people, on introducing people to people with really a sense of being able to make a difference, to make an impact by teaching people about other cultures. And DK is the perfect match because of that. And so they're our underwriter. And we've gotten even closer together because they have a new book that will be hitting all the bookstores beginning of September called Where to Go When.
You know, I can't get a copy of that. I talked to Katie Ball, and she said it's not really released till September 25th, and they had very few pre-publication copies. So you tell us about it, because I haven't been able to get hold of it.
Yeah, Where to Go When, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, tell us about that book.
Oh, yes, certainly will. Where to Go When, the best destinations all year round. I'm fortunate to have a copy, one of the few pre-release copies. I was a consultant editor on the book, and I wrote the foreword for it. And the foreword really does kind of say it. I mean, and people, for years and years and years, people ask me as a travel writer and a travel broadcaster and now the host of a television show, they've asked me, what is my favorite places to travel? And, you know, so that conversation can be quite extensive. It depends on where you want to go. Depends on you. Depends on what turns you on to travel. What it is about the travel experience you're looking back for in a particular circumstance, a particular day, in a particular season. And so what DK has done is come up with a book that's an excellent source of information, also an inspiration, too. It really does get you fired up about traveling. And what it does is they have over 350 vacation ideas, and destinations are organized by month by month. So, for instance, you would go to January, for instance, and you'd see St. Petersburg, Russia highlighted, Bangkok, Thailand highlighted, Jamaica, Costa Rica highlighted, Hong Kong highlighted, and they would give you things within the destinations that you could be doing at that time of year. For instance, in February in Ottawa, Canada, the Rideau Canal is completely frozen over. It becomes the largest ice skating rink in the world, and people skate for miles with stands serving hot mulled wine and their favorite foods of the winter during that period. So Ottawa, Canada, although it's a wonderful destination year round, is highlighted in the February month.
How many people contributed to this book?
Oh, there are dozens and dozens of writers that contributed to the book. A real team of travel experts were involved in it. And like I mentioned, there's 130, or maybe I didn't mention, 130 destinations are featured in the book, and within that, they feature all kinds of activities, such like snorkeling the Great Barrier Reef, or cruising the Galapagos Islands, something that we're going to be doing later in the year, being in awe watching Victoria Falls in Zambia. We're going to be traveling there for Travelscope television and radio in October, and we're looking forward to that. But festivals are highlighted. The Memphis in May Festival is the featured event for the Memphis, Tennessee highlight. But what happens is throughout the book is broken into different themes, holiday themes. There's a festivals and culture theme, unforgettable journeys, the natural world, luxury and romance, activity breaks and family getaways. So different themes, and within each theme, there are destinations that are some of the best places for you to go to experience that particular aspect of the travel experience, whether it's traveling with their families or heading out to make a festival. And they cover everything from, you know, the ones that you would think, Paris, Rome, New York, and also go to a few more exotic places like Zambia or La Paz, Mexico, even, and Timbuktu. So, and they give suggested itineraries, so it tells you where you should go and how many days to really get a flavor of the destination, and also, of course, like DK does and all of their guys, there's a lot of practical information on getting there, transportation, weather, accommodations, helpful hints of do's and don'ts, that kind of thing. So it's a beautiful book. It's going to be wonderful for gifts for the holiday season. Great coffee table book, but something that you just don't look at, something you can actually use to plan your trip so you can sit there and say, and to inspire you about a trip. Because I think people who travel basically are people who dream, and they get inspired by saying, I just always wanted to go to this place. I always wanted to go to India, for instance. I always wanted to go to India. I knew it would be a life-changing experience, and because I went with that in mind, it surely was a life-changing experience, but it took me a long time from when I had the first thought about wanting to go to India to actually getting there. And this book is feeds that kind of desire, that travel wanderlust that all of us have, because I think Travelscope should be, but I know that travel is something that everybody's obsessed with in some way or another. People either just, I got to get away for a vacation, or I got to get away to someplace that's different from where I am today, someplace that shows me that, something new, something different, something exciting, make me look at things in a new perspective. And I think that's what travel's about. And this Where to Go When from DK Eyewitness Travel Guides is an excellent book, and I am extremely proud and honored to be associated with the book and with DK, and I'm so happy that they feel the same way about Travelscope and have chosen to be our underwriter for our television show, and they're also one of the sponsors on our radio show as well.
Yeah, it's really funny. We're planning a trip to Milan in October, and you know what the first thing I did was?
After I bought the hotel, I bought
Milan and the Lakes.
That's fabulous. Well, I know that DK is a favorite guide for people who don't even know that they like DK, because I've had people come up to, I was at the New York Times travel show with DK and talking about Travelscope television as well, and people would come up and say, God, these are my favorite books. I didn't know that was DK Eyewitness Travel Guides. They didn't put the name to the book that they've used for years and years and years.
Yes, yeah. No, I understand exactly what you mean. I mean, the fabulous part about it, I think, we just talked to somebody who got back from Italy and England, and they were on a tour. So the places they went were determined by the tour. Now, to me, these books are among the tools I use to make sure that we can make our own tour, that we don't have to go where the pack is supposed to go, and where the guide, the only places the guide knows, we can go everywhere and anywhere. And so I really feel empowered. And the only thing that frustrates me is I know you can't get everything there is in Italy, but when we went to Le Marche and I only found 9 pages on the whole region, I was really disappointed.
Oh, yeah, it's hard to get it all in, exactly.
Yeah, so I got two more guidebooks about Le Marche, so I had plenty of other information.
Fabulous. DK, you allowed me to give out my website address, travelscope.net, and I appreciate that.
No problem.
I should also give out DK's website address, dktravel.com, where people can get some pre-released information on where to go when.
Well, Joseph, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we could talk on and on. I know that. We could talk specific places, but I'm getting wild signals from the control room at this point. So let's leave it where when you get back from Victoria Falls, we'll arrange to have you tell us about it.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
That
I'd love
sounds
to do
great.
That. And to your viewers in WQED and in Pittsburgh, and the viewers in Philadelphia, I hope they will tune in Travelscope to television. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to speak.
Oh, Joseph, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
We'll take a break now. Goodbye.
The Internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for Internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated Internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. NIDHOG, NIDHOG.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, NIDHOG.com. Internet the NIDHOG way.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
That one woke me up.
Were you asleep?
Yeah, I was nodding off in the commercial break.
Well, I thought we would sort of do a little rounding up of products from the Fancy Food Show, because I mean that's a good way to get rolling on a Sunday morning is to talk about new products and exciting products.
I'm sure it is.
So let's launch right in with the. A luxury product. Paolo Cabadoni, please say hello to our listeners.
Ciao, I am Paolo Cabadoni.
Come sta?
Bene, grazie. Sono un produttore italiano di Modena di aceto balsamico tradizionale.
He makes this traditional balsamico from
Modena.
From Modena, and he has other products as well. Now we're going to jump to Imanella Agassisti, who is the export manager, since Signor Cabadoni is reluctant to speak English. But thank you for talking to us.
Grazie.
Now,
hi. This is a very old company, dating back to 1860, and I think is one of the oldest company producing balsamic vinegar in Italy. They have a very high quality product and a wide range of items. They have the traditional balsamic vinegar Modena POD and many other things, delicious things I would say, including condiments with cherry, condiments with juniper, and condiments with truffle. And of course, last but not least, the Saba, which is made with Queen's apple, and it's delicious if you use it on ice cream and cakes, biscuits, and fruit salads.
Now, I must say, when you say high quality, this is extremely high quality. Where is this company located?
The company is located in Castelvetro, which is a very small and nice little town close to Modena in Emilia-Romagna, Italy.
Now, I've been captivated. Of course, I love the juniper balsamic. I love that. But I've been captivated by this condiment, as you call it, of the balsamic with truffle. How is that made?
It is made with cooked must and truffle, real Italian truffle. These two are mixed together. They are put in a barrel, and then they stay there for at least 2 years, and then it's bottled, and the result that is a very good condiment you can use on a risotto or on meat, and it has a very good taste of truffle.
There's a purity to this product. Why is that? It's just produced so well.
Because Paolo Cavedoni is in love with his job, so he is doing everything by himself and taking care of everything. So I guess the result can't be anything else than the best.
Now, is there distribution of this product now in the U.S.?
This is our first show in the United States. We had a lot of customers and a lot of contacts with distributors, so we hope after the show we'll have the possibility to enter this market.
And meanwhile, for further information, is there a website?
Yes, the website is www.acetaiacavedoni.it.
And listeners, I think I will spell that. acetaiacavedoni.it. And go on the website and just get the information on this product, because it's spectacular. I want to thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much to you.
Will he say ciao?
Yes, I will say ciao. Ciao a tutti.
Well, yeah, well, actually, we were going to have Paolo say ciao, but Paolo is taking yet another order because this product is so good, it's moving fast. Again, thank you.
Grazie ancora.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a great product.
Yeah, it's pretty dynamic environment there too at the fancy food show.
It was dynamic.
quite a lot of noise going on in the background.
And now we're moving right
all the way across the world. Why not?
One of my favorites and your favorites too is Brook Farm.
It's just a wonderful story.
On the menu right off the bat, and the fancy food show went down under to Australia to Brook Farm, where we are talking to Martin Brook. Hello, Martin.
Hello.
Martin, I've been eating all of your products, macadamia nuts, macadamia mousse. I'll let you elaborate on that, but first tell us how this farm got started.
Well, actually, we bought 100 acres of denuded cattle pasture. It was an old dairy farm. So we stripped it of all the weed trees, and we planted about 4,500 macadamias and about 20,000 rainforest and eucalypt trees as well. And today, it's glorious. It's beautiful.
Now, of course, we're going to come visit you. tell us where exactly it is.
We're about 5 minutes from the surfing town of Byron Bay. It's in the subtropics, so it's a very similar climate, indeed, very similar soil structure to Hawaii. Great for growing macadamias.
You have also a conservation issue here, right?
Yeah, we're passionate about this thing called sustainable farming. We see it just not in terms of planting macadamia trees, but we plant the other trees as well to create a really, really important sustainable environment. And in fact, it's very interesting, you know, the trees, the eucalypt forest, for instance, is home for owls. We used to bait our farm. 6 years ago, you would have come to our farm and you would have found these horrible little blue blocks, every 10 trees. That was because, would you believe it, the macadamia nutshell is very hard, but we have a bush rat that will eat through the nuts. Now we have the owls, and the owls actually eat up to 2,000 rats and mice a year. So we are getting rid of chemicals and pesticides on our farm. And it's happening because of the balance, nature's balance.
Tell us these wonderful products. I will vouch for every single one of them. Just list the products.
Well, that's so kind of you. We do a range of beautiful first cold-pressed macadamia oils. You know, the macadamia oil is so healthy for you and absolutely delicious. We infuse with lemon myrtle and lime and chili. We then have a range of macadamia mueslis. Mueslis quite new to America. It's a European tradition, but we actually use our own macadamia nuts, 17 ingredients. The breakfast that you have that sustains you to lunchtime, beautiful tasting. We do a toasted, we do a gluten-free, which is also oven-baked, and we do a natural, which is like a Swiss muesli.
And you do, of course, flavored macadamia nuts.
We do indeed. We do three varieties. We do a roast and salted natural. All of them have beautiful West Australian sea salts. We do a bush pepper spice mix. Now, that's really interesting. That's got all native Australian spices and peppers. And then we do a Kashmiri chili. And the Kashmiri chili is not too hot because we don't want to destroy that beautiful, sweet, nutty flavor of the nut.
Not to mention the texture. I've never seen a macadamia nut. Do you have a picture of what it looks like?
Well, actually, if you look behind you there it is. It comes in a green shell, and the shell opens up. We actually take the husks off on our farm. We chop it up, and we use it as a fertilizer. We put it back underneath the trees. But the shell of the macadamia, if you used ordinary nutcrackers, you break the nutcrackers. So we get our nuts sent off to have them cut with very, very, very powerful, very sharp knives. Then they come back to us in all different varieties, and then we put them in our range of products.
A website.
Our website is www.brookfarm.com.au.
This has been a delight, and your product is, and I can hardly wait to come and look at your farm.
Well, we're really looking forward to you guys coming down in February. I'll give you the conducted tour. We'll go over the rainforest and the plantation. We'll have a great time.
I'm looking forward to it also.
You know, just one more note on this. They sent me some recipes. I've made pesto, and one of the pesto recipes is on their website, and it calls for arugula, mint, one of their special infused macadamia nut oils, and a wealth of macadamia nuts.
And it still only makes about 2 tablespoons full.
It was good.
It was good. We didn't have enough macadamias to go around. Oh. I will admit to a national preference in the next track, but it speaks for itself.
Eric Brun Binslev, we're very happy to be here because we're at Duchy Originals, and the duchy in question is the Duchy of Cornwall that we're a part of England we are very, very fond of and have relatives living there. In fact, Peter's brother lives there. Tell us exactly what these products are. What is the Duchy Originals line?
The Duchy Originals was started by Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, and Duke of Cornwall. The idea was hatched in the late 80s because he had still has the fundamental belief that agriculture should move from being intensive to sustainable and organic. There wasn't much space for him actually there was not a lot of listeners to his message. And what he decided to do is incubate, hatch a brand that could actually stimulate demand and therefore stimulate the conversion from intensive farming to organic farming. So Duchy Originals was set up in 92 to do this mission. And now 15, 16 years later, has actually grown to become the biggest organic food brand in the United Kingdom.
Wow, that's quite an impressive achievement for the Prince. What is in this line to date? It's expanding, as I understand it, but today, what is on there?
Well, today is a line of more than 300 products, spanning from the traditional food items, which is exported all over the world, such as the jam, the teas, the chocolates, the biscuits, certainly, but also a range of fresh and chilled products, ranging from soup to traditional gravies to bacon and milk even, all coming from and seeking to preserve the heritage of agriculture, meaning that the breeds that are used to rear for the bacon, for instance, are breeds that are almost extinct and need saving. The oats, the barley, the wheat that are used in the baking products all comes from varietals which needs protection genetically, and so forth. There's a lot of different agendas attached to the duchy, but fundamentally it's organic. It's non-profit. It means all the profit goes to the Prince's charities. And the best of British agricultural heritage, meaning the varietals or the breeds used, but also the manufacturing processes and the recipes that goes with it. So it's a very holistic brand from soil to consumer.
There's nothing wrong with this product, is there?
It's hard to find anything. Once you taste it, it's hard to find anything wrong with it, certainly. There's always sides that can be criticized, and nobody's perfect. But it's certainly an aspiration of this brand, and certainly for its patron and sort of founder, that this brand maintains its 100% integrity wherever it goes.
How thrilled is the Prince?
I'm sure he's delighted about the progress the brand have had, not just in the UK, but also in export markets. And the brand continues to grow. There have already been set out a foundation to create something similar in India, to help the conversion of intensive farmland to organic farmland and help the local producers, but also the communities around them to create a more sustainable livelihood for them.
How about giving our listeners a website?
If you want more information, I suggest to go to www.duchyoriginals.com. There you will find information on the products, the background, the history, but also great recipes if you want to do some home cooking based on the traditional recipes that we are using at the company.
And can you buy online?
You cannot buy online currently. We have a trade website in the US of A where you can go online. It's called www.dutchyusa.com. And there you can actually go in and register and buy the few items available for sale in the United States. But I do recommend you go to DutchOriginals.com, see who is your local distributor, and contact your local distributor for more information.
Now, you're very good at this. You're from Denmark. I think you're in the wrong business. You should be on in media.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take a break.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We haven't even mentioned the website yet, which is www.onthemenuradio.com.
And we've been busy little bees in the background, listeners. Sometimes we're really organized, and other times we're really not very organized. And this is one of the times when we were not very organized. But we're back organized again now.
Hopefully.
So we're...
Let's go to one of our favorite...
While we were in New York for the Fancy Food Show, we also did a little dining other than picking up little bits and pieces at the show itself. In fact, we had a couple of absolutely wonderful experiences. One fills this segment and one fills the next one.
We had the most superb dinner at Gilt the other night, and we now are talking to Christopher Lee, the chef, who has really transformed this restaurant. I asked you when we were talking beforehand, I wasn't aware really much about you until you suddenly won Rising Star Chef when you were executive chef at Striped Bass in Philadelphia. And what crossed my mind is that your cooking is so sophisticated here at Gilt. How did you get from cooking fish to being a glamour chef?
It's a good question. It's kind of funny. You know, every place you go and every restaurant you work at, it's always a stepping stone. You know, working at the Striped Bass was definitely a stepping stone. We also still had, you know, Steven Starr, who was the owner of the Striped Bass and the Starr organization. He kind of had a little handcuff on us, told us what we can and can't do. So, you know, we did a very, really good job down there, but definitely we didn't rise to our potential. And here at Gilt, we're actually having that opportunity to rise to our potential and be what we want, do what we want, and have a lot of fun with what we do.
Now, this place is a very special place. Could you explain a little bit of the history? And it's glamorous, it's gilded, it's almost over the top.
Well, it's the Villard Mansion, so it's the old world New York. You look at the Villard Mansion, you come in, it's one of the first kind of residences ever built in Manhattan. And it dates back into the 1800s. It's a beautiful architectural layout. The woodwork, the handcraft, it's just stunning. It's very inspiring when you walk through these walls. A lot of history here, whether it's from, you know, private cooks and people's homes to the Hemsley Hotel, to the New York Palace, to the Le Cirque, to current Gilt. I mean, you can sit around here and you can say there's been walking through these halls, let's say. But it's just a beautiful place. It's gilded. It's super high-end, super luxurious. It shows the sophistication of what New York was when it was built.
But now you brought up a point. You brought up two points. You kind of started, you took this job and had to turn around the menu, as you said before, in 5 days. So you're working under two misconceptions or two clouds. One is that it was a type of food that was not well accepted in the city because it was so wildly experimental. The second is that everyone viewed it as a one-time shot, and it was too expensive.
Now, I think maybe you should tell us that it's neither of those now.
I mean, that's true. I mean, when I was hired and came upon to replace Paul Liebrand as the chef at Gilt, you know, we came in with a different mentality. We really wanted to bring a new focus, a new cuisine here to show people that the pretentiousness of the food that was before is lightening up. We also reduced the menu price. You know, it was $92 for prefix, and we brought it down to $78 a prefix or three courses. And really, we're going after a new American cuisine with a farm fresh seasonal product idea, where we're going to have like food that, you know, just, you know, that's super tasty and it looks great. You know, our goal here is when you look at our menu, you just don't want one item. You want like five or six. And that means you might have to come back next week to try something else. So we really want to make things recognizable and suitable for our clients, you know, and not something that's so out there and over their head that they don't know what they're eating and what they're getting into, and they're leaving confused. The last thing we want is someone to leave us confused about what they just went through, their experience.
Well, we weren't confused. We knew we had an absolutely fabulous meal. I'm going to ask you in a little bit to go through some of the items that we had, but you said something that was so sensitive before we started recording about the difference between cooking, the sensitivity to cooking fish, and the sense that what you need to do to cook meat. And I thought that was something that listeners would enjoy hearing.
Well, I don't want to piss anyone off or stereotype anyone, but in my opinion, you know, I never really wanted to be a part of the seafood world, but I kind of was working at Oceana, striped bass. But it taught you to learn finesse. That's one thing I've learned about seafood cookery compared to meat cookery, where it's very finesse. It's very feminine. It's very delicate. You got to have a really light touch and a great palate to understand how to pair like sides or garnishes or sauces with seafood versus meat cookery, which is very aggressive, very manly, very like, you know, robust. And you can kind of mix a lot of things and get away with it with meat. You can't so with seafood. Seafood has different fat flavors and contents and textures and the color of the meat. There's a lot of great aspects to seafood, and it's a really big challenge. You know, it's challenged my life for the last probably about 6 years. So it's nice to be playing with both, though. I'll tell you that one.
Chris, I have this menu, which you beautifully printed out, of what we had to eat that when we had dinner here. And I just want you to look over some of these things and pick some things that you particularly like and tell us why you did them or anything particular about them.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of funny when you talk about our menu and what we do and how we design it. Some dishes come out of us out of the blue, and there's no rhyme or reason to it. And then there's some dishes that actually have a rhyme and reason to it, let's say. You know, you were just talking about the soft shell crab. I mean, the soft shell crab came about, I was eating dinner at Rosa Messicana, and I was having dinner there with my wife, and we were just enjoying the evening with each other. And I ordered the tortilla soup, and I love tortilla soup. But I was sitting down with my sous chefs, and we're coming up with the dishes, and I wanted to pair corn, I wanted to go tomato with soft shell, and I wasn't sure. But then all of a sudden, I just thought about that dining experience. Like, you know what? I'm gonna make a sauce that resembles that tortilla soup, that spicy tomato sauce, and enhance that with like really went after now like the Southwest with the Mexican flavors with avocado, the lime creme fraiche, the corn itself, you know, a little cilantro in there, and then the soft shells fried with it's battered with tempura that has lime and cilantro in it as well. So it kind of made sense all of a sudden. It was definitely a dish we wrestled with for about a week or two, but it just made sense after that. And I think a lot of our dishes come like that, whether we have a favorite dish or a classic dish or a traditional dish, and then we just incorporate that into another look, a fine dining feel. The yellowfin tuna Wellington, which is our signature dish, which is a lot of people talk about, was same thing. You know, I was sitting down and, you know, just thinking about classic dishes. I was like, beef Wellington. I was like, that's one of the winners. Like, how can we incorporate that? And like, we can't do beef because it's too similar. We said, well, what else? What's beef resemble? Like, the tuna. Tuna is the beef of the sea. It's a red meat. It's dense. It's steaky. We said, you know what? It makes sense. And then it kind of like fell into place. We just paired with some more finesse products and techniques, and it just kind of just developed on itself. So, you know, when we develop menu items and when we go through it, we really try to incorporate food that people – well, let's put it this way. we cook for the people rather than cook for ourselves. When a dish comes up that we just don't know, while we trying too hard to please ourselves and not trying hard enough to please our customers, and that's the question we ask. And then it always comes back and comes full circle. We always end up in the right direction, let's say.
You're really sensible. How about some more items on that?
We're looking at the diarrhea sea scallop ceviche, which started your meal. It was like kind of like a really fun play on a lot of Pan-Asian. My father is Chinese, so I do have like that Asian blood in me. So we kind of like went after more of like a mixed Asian feel there. Went after a different way with the ceviche, made it the ceviche dressing is actually based with lychee. So it's a lychee ceviche dressing. So it's kind of that sweet and sour feel. People could relate to it, the flavors aren't that out there, but we had some interesting things to it as well. Textures, full textures, peas, sea urchin. We make a yuzu caviar for it, which is kind of like that avant-garde technique. Where we slide in some techniques here and there, but they have to make sense. Our final product has to taste good as well as look good, but it can't be too confusing. One of the new additions was the Neiman Ranch pork loin, which is probably one of our new favorites. Very Italian-esque, with the fragola pasta, with the baby arugula, the pine nut puree, the pickled ramps in the sauce with the peaches, the honey vinegar. Kind of like, it's a lot of fun, that's definitely more towards like an Italian spirit. So you can see where the menu goes. It starts wherever it wants and ends where it goes.
Now, your wine program was, he just did somersaults to pair up all this food. Tell us a little bit about the wine program.
Jason Ferris and I are very good friends outside of work, which makes our relationship at work even better. We understand each other. We know where we're going. He knows, he tries every dish we put on the menu. He tries it with wine. We sit down together. We try. He educates me why he thinks his wine tastes great with the food. And I agree or I disagree. I give my opinion. But the beautiful thing about it, he understands. He loves food. So he understands how food makes wine taste better and how wine makes food taste better. And when you have that combination, we really could do a dining experience. So we encourage people when they come in to dine with us to let us do it, because we know what we're talking about. We know how to pair the perfect tasting menu with the perfect wine pairing, where you're going to leave here with a sense of, I understand then, because that's what we try on a daily basis. And the wine program's huge. We're looking at it sells like almost $1 million. It has verticals like I've never seen before. It's pretty impressive, let's say. And he knows what he's talking about. Very, very young, but he definitely knows what he's talking about.
Do we ever want to go back tonight?
I want to go back too.
Put me on a plane. Pour me into guilt in New York again. Listeners, everything you heard before about this place is all wrong. I mean, it's totally transformed. Fabulous new attitude. Fabulous new cooking. The same absolutely magnificent room. I understand that the man who built the mansion went bankrupt on the way through building it, which is really not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising.
So this is a place that should be on your dining list in New York for sure.
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to go to it despite all the bad stuff I'd heard before.
Anyway,
but I'm glad I waited and had this experience.
That's right. You wanted to take me there when the Mad Englishman was there.
Yeah, I know.
And I, well, somehow I resisted. I can't imagine how I could possibly have resisted going to a restaurant where the chef is a crazy Englishman.
I think you read some of the reviews.
Is that what it was? Maybe it was.
And but at any rate, Chris,
I know you were mightily intrigued.
I was intrigued, yeah.
But intrigued doesn't mean
totally
you'll be very
mad.
Satisfied.
He sounded even madder than mad. But at any rate, Christopher Lee is a real professional guy and a very smart, intelligent guy. And so that if you want,
well, you can tell that from listening to how well he expressed himself.
I mean, yeah.
This is speaking on the menu and speaking to a public at large is something that most chefs don't do very well.
Now we find more and more of them do.
Although they're getting better at it, but he is really articulate.
Well, they have to. They're now media stars by way of being successful as chefs.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
They have to be media darlings.
Again, and they're all
just like you and me.
They're all writing.
Are we media
blogs?
Are we media darlings?
I don't think. I don't think if you're a media, you could be a media darling.
I caught you on that one.
We might as well just give up on that because it's time to take a break.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember. 412-661-6001. ASP Station. 412-661-6001.
You know how sometimes you hear people say, I wonder if I have the right investments. I wonder if I can retire early. I'm not sure how much money I will need to invest today to retire comfortably. How do I know what I should do to be able to help my children pay for college? What do I need to know to start a business or buy a house? We are the people who can help you find the answers to those questions. I'm Mary Grace Musenegi, the senior partner of the Musenegi Financial Group. We're a financial consulting firm that helps people make wise decisions with their money. We have a unique second opinion program that allows us to review your financial plans and investments with you without you changing advisors, companies, or products. So for a free consultation, please give us a call at 412-833-2888 or email me personally at mfgplanners, Mary Grace Musenegi at mfgplanners.com. Again, email me at marygrace@mfgplanners.com.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And up next is another magnificent meal that we did when we were in recently in Manhattan.
Well, this is curious because this is Paris. This is Paris, New York.
It is. You feel exactly like a bistro in Paris.
Chef Francois Payard. This is the first time that On the Menu has been in Payard's, and it is absolutely charming beyond belief. I feel as though I'm in Paris. Could you describe, you have a pastry shop in the front?
The idea is supposed to be transport you to Paris. That was the whole idea. And the idea is a pastry shop when you first enter. And after that, you have a bistro, it's like a restaurant. And the bistro is open for lunch and dinner. And the pastry shop is open 7 in the morning to 11 p.m. It's the only 7-Eleven, but French 7-Eleven.
That's good. Of course, your name is synonymous with pastry. And you just told us a wonderful story about a wedding cake you did. Could you tell us the wedding story in Las Vegas?
Yes, it was a story of these two people supposed to get married on the 707th. And 3 months before they were supposed to get married, they both lost their job. And I think the Caesars Palace, you know, found the story very great, you know, and they asked them to pay for everything. And they flew me there to make the wedding cake because we're opening in Payard at the Caesars Palace, you know. And the story was very fun. And they get married on the 7-7, and the daughter too. And they get married on the 7-7-07.
That's a great story.
I heard it was a lucky number for the game, but I'm sorry, I don't gamble.
Now, you started to say you're opening a place in Las Vegas. Now, you have this place in New York, and you have a catering company in New York, which you run with your wife, as I recall, and you're opening. Tell us all these other places where you're opening, and you must be going frantic.
Tell you the truth, I opened a Payard in Sao Paulo like 5 years ago, and my partner from Sao Paulo now open another place in Rio, and we just went to open the place in Rio, and pretty much is easy for us. Sao Paulo provides the pastry for Rio, ship the pastry, and we finish pastry almost like in France. You know, we have this factory, and every day we finish the pastry and we make the fresh tarts and everything. Alors, this one was pretty easy. It's the most beautiful place in Rio. Leblon is the most beautiful shopping center. It's incredible. And after that, we opened 6 months ago, Tupaya in Tokyo. And Tokyo is, they love always French. And for once, they love something about New York. Because, you know, Japanese love everything French, you know, and more they like things about New York and everything. And they asked me to open this pastry shop. And for that, we did the chef come to train for 3 months over here. And we opened 6 months ago. It turned out to be very good. And they may open a third one to the end of the year.
But you're traveling quite a lot.
Yes, the last 2 months, you know, I travel a lot, too much. I don't see my bed, and I'm missing my bed. but tell you the truth, I choose to do that during the summer because it's quiet time of the year for me too. New York, you know, is getting quiet. Everybody left New York because for summer vacation, go to the Hamptons, and it's a perfect timing for me to do that because when comes the busy season, I never leave the restaurant.
Oh, you don't? Oh, that's amazing. Now, you are from Nice, I understand. And is there anything distinctive about chefs from Nice as opposed to, say, chefs from Lyon?
I don't think it's a very big difference. I think every part of France is different. You know, Nice, people are much more warm. Lyon, they're nice people too. Paris is much more pretentious, I would like to say. But if I compare Paris and New York, you know, I think it's all these big cities. If you ask a New Yorker, are you American? No, I'm New Yorker. But it's the same thing in Paris for us. You know, Parisians are very different than everything in France, you know, but I think it's pretty much his whole big city are the same thing.
Now, who are your great heroes in the world of chefs?
A lot, you know, a lot of our great, I don't know about hero, it's not like a movie, but I would like to say I'm a great fan of, you know, a lot of chefs, you know, even like in New York, you know, Jean-Georges, you have Daniel, you know. Jean-Georges, why? Because he has so many places and he can keep the quality. You can talk about like some French chef, but even more like David Burke, you know, because David is a great American chef and having 3 restaurants and doing very well. You know, it's not how many restaurants you're having, it's how many good establishments you have. And that makes a big difference.
Now, I started out by saying, Chef, that your name is synonymous with pastries, and you started this whole movement of pastry shops in New York. You have this savory bistro, and who is your chef de cuisine?
Philippe Bertinot is the chef de cuisine for the last 10 years, and I should say that it's not just savory. It's a bistro for lunch. You can see a lot of lunch items, but for dinner, it's more like a restaurant. Only difference, what we call bistro, because it's more casual. People, they can come in jeans, you know, people. For me, my philosophy is I always tell everyone in my neighborhood, when you have nothing in your refrigerator, you can come for dinner. And Philippe is really an incredible chef. The last 10 years, you can see all the articles Philippe received and everything. The food is really incredible. And why? Because Philippe is the only few chef always in the kitchen, making all the plates. And Philippe really love and care about what he do. And if he's a restaurant successful, it's because Philippe hard work.
But I thought all chefs were supposed to do that.
Yeah, but sometimes some chefs are too busy, you know. And but Philippe is caring about what he do, and he, you know, he's working with love. You know, sometimes love is something that you cannot express.
Tell us a little bit about this food on this menu that I'm looking at.
Very simple. The lunch menu is taught to pretty much like women, because we have a lot of women, you know, for lunch, you know, you can see behind you. And much more salad. Philippe has the best chicken salad everybody say in New York. It's 3 different dressings. You have a potato salad, you have a beautiful arugula and endive salad with another dressing, like mustard dressing. And you have the chicken, you know, is just a plain chicken, but very crispy chicken. With a jab sauce, you know, with tomato inside, it's very good. And it's big enough for lunch, because most people, lunchtime, they like one plate. Or we always offer the menu, like $28 3-course menu. And the lunch menu is told more like a sandwich, salad, you know, a plate, a pasta of the day. Then for dinner, it's completely different. Why? Because people, for lunch, they don't want to be bothered with crazy food. They want something great, simple, something they like to eat, and with a pastry, because We always have a dish with a pastry. And to the end, you know, in 1 hour, they can be in and out of 45 minutes. And lunch everywhere is always quick. And that's the reason the formula for lunch is very different. And for dinner, Philippe loves much more the dinner menu than the lunch menu. Because you have lunch, baby burger and everything, lamb burger. But the things, dinner is much more for him to show his skill or what he can do. And to be like a beautiful quail on the menu or a beautiful halibut what you have right now, you know. And much more, you know, Philippe is going to the market twice a week. And the menu change very often with daily produce. And Philippe, one more time, is for the last 10 years, go every Wednesday and every Saturday to Union Square to pick his fruit, his vegetable. And he's very caring about his produce because he grew up in farm. And that's the reason why Philippe is all about market and even tell me sometimes, we should change the dessert menu because the season is going out, you know. Even sometimes giving me direction.
Now, what's the general state of French restaurants in New York today?
French restaurants in New York are, I think, it's very different than the last 15 years ago, where it was like much more attitude, much more heavy food, much more beurre sauce. Now it's completely different. I think the evolution, the cooking, evolves everywhere in the world. And I think more and more people don't like this heavy sauce, but not the butter. It's much more on the olive side, you know, olive oil, you know. And the whole process, emulsion, things like that, change. I think the French cooking is still very strong, but in a very different way, much more like in the maybe with accent of Mediterranean food and Italian food, or much more on the olive oil side and on the lighter produce.
And what about in France? Has it changed in France?
In France, depend where you are, is you know, some place like in Vaughan, is with Georges Blanc, you know, it's always a heavy sauce, heavy butter, but it's where people are going for, you know. But, you know, I think every region in France have to be specific of what they do. Doesn't mean because time changed and they change, you know, that's their own idea. But in New York, we have to be much more open to the market. And in New York, every chef in New York is much more understanding about the need of a client.
Thank you for talking to us. I wish we could talk forever and ever, but I see you're very busy. So, till the next time, au revoir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, he is such a gentleman. Isn't he wonderful?
He's a lovely man. And he broke all the rules of lunch with this 45 minutes to an hour and just one dish.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't know what on the menu we didn't have.
We should have brought it.
Actually, I don't think we had the chicken salad.
No, I was trying to remember. I don't think
we had the lamb burgers. The lamb burgers were fabulous.
Yeah.
They didn't bring us the steak tartare on the menu they served us, so we asked for a little bit to try, and it was very good. There was an excellent fish dish in there. It might have been the halibut.
Halibut, I think it was the halibut.
And there were at least two or three other things.
Oh, yeah. And we did not have chicken salad. I know that, yeah.
And we had wine.
Did we have wine?
Yeah. I mean, you have to have wine. You have to have wine with lunch. We were going home that day, listeners. We hopped in a cab.
That's right.
We hopped in a cab when right outside the restaurant, headed for the airport, came home to Pittsburgh, and I don't think we ate dinner.
I don't think we had any.
Why would we eat dinner? We ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner at lunchtime.
We did. Well, that's really very exciting.
So this is a great place to pop in. It's on.
Everybody there looks so happy.
It's on Lexington Avenue, around about 72nd, 73rd Street. Look it up. Pied Bistro should be on your list. Absolutely. And if you hunger for things in the pastry department, it's a sight to behold as you walk into the store.
There were lots of people hungering for those pastries. Well, what do they call it?
It's a patisserie.
Patisserie. Right?
There you go. That's why all my French. I'm getting all my French out today.
Here comes the money.
Here comes the money. Okay. Here comes the money. So we'll see you listeners same time, same place next week. Here comes the money.
Bye-bye.